Welcome. You're listening to the Grow Ortho Podcast, presented by Hip Creative. This podcast is dedicated to those who want to stand strong in their market and be leaders in their community. Now onto the show with your host, Luke Infinger.
Hey, this is Luke, CEO at Hip, and I just wanted to briefly preface this podcast, this episode. Maybe you're watching it in video form or listening to it on your iPhone or in your car. Justin Huell and I, back in May of 2021, went out to Los Angeles and we actually created a documentary for orthodontic practices. In that time, we also went on a show, Business Rockstars, in Burbank, California, where we just got to talk about our background, how we got started, not just Hip, but actually multiple businesses that we've created. So again, I just wanted to preface this episode. It's a little bit different. It's a look into the owners of Hip Creative, who we are, what we do, and our background. So I hope you enjoy. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
This is Business Rockstars. I'm Mark Lack, and joining us is Luke and Justin. We've got two special guests here. They're the co-founders of Hip Creative. Pleasure to have you guys on the show.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Tell us, what does Hip Creative do?
So Hip Creative, essentially, we're a growth partner for orthodontists. We do that by delivering a marketing framework, the patient acquisition and retention framework.
Okay, and you have another business that's your other focus?
Yeah, Holstein Parts. It's an auto part manufacturing company. We specialize in engine management sensors. My brother actually runs that with us. It's been founded since 2016.
Very cool. So one of the things I wanted to know, and we ask this to all the guests now that come on the show, is how has your businesses been impacted with everything going on with COVID, the pandemic? Has it helped your business? Some people come on here and they're like, our businesses have grown from it. And others come on, unfortunately, and say, our business has been, you know, negatively impacted. Where do you guys fall?
So we grew a lot during the time. And essentially with orthodontists, we pivoted in early March and rolled out a program to help orthodontists see people virtually. Thank God for technology, right?
Yeah.
Phones and there's actually platforms to do that, dental monitoring. So we basically came up with a simple way to get leads, see those leads, qualify them through a virtual consultation process, and then move them into actually getting started with treatment. So we actually doubled since COVID in the marketing agency, and then the auto part company experienced a lot of growth as well.
Yeah, a ton of growth. Yeah, we brought on a lot of customers. More people are buying aftermarket auto parts, which is what we sell. And so it kind of exploded too.
Very cool. That's the answer that I'm hoping for whenever I ask people, because I never really know. I'm always scared they're going to be like, I've lost everything.
Yeah.
But you guys wouldn't be here as business rock stars if that wasn't the case. So, you know, one of the things I like to do too is I like to ask the hard questions. I don't always want to make it seem like we're only doing softballs here. So the hard question I want to ask is, why should a business choose you? Why should these dentists choose working with you guys over all the agencies? I feel like online agency services are very saturated. There's so many people promising amazing results online. So why do people choose you? Why are you different? Why are you better?
Well, first and foremost, we're a partner. So we don't want to just be the marketing guys. We really get to know on an intimate business level the orthodontist that we work with. So that makes us a little bit different. We want to align our marketing with the operations, and you can't really do that unless you really want to roll up your sleeves and get your hands dirty. About a year and a half ago, we realized that about 10% of our clients were making 90% of the revenue. And we really started to peel back the layers and understand why. Fast forward today, we've essentially developed our framework. Not only just marketing, but realize there's a lot of leaks that can happen with marketing. So we have training that goes all the way from the front desk to the COO. And then we also have our software practice beacon. So all the leads come in, we can see how they move through the new patient process and turn into patients.
So explain a little bit more of the difference between coming in as a partner versus the traditional agency, where I guess maybe they would pay you a monthly fee. You'd come in, you maybe run their advertising, and that's kind of it. It sounds like you just said, you come in as a partner. Could you just explain the difference there?
Yeah, I mean, it's as simple as this. We like to say, let's plug the leaks, then turn on the leads. And if you don't really get down to business and understand, well, where are you winning and where are you losing and where are the leaks happening?
What are some of these leaks, for example?
So for instance, in an orthodontic practice, the front desk, and digitally, we call it the digital front desk. So what's that first touch point? And so if you were to go on a website or call a practice or fill out a form online, Facebook, when are they getting to you and how are they nurturing you? Well, we found through secret shopping practices that most practices weren't even following up with leads. So most agencies will focus on vanity metrics, click-through rate, reach, impressions. Mm-hmm. We realized that and said, hey, we have to address these things before we can turn on the leads. Otherwise, your problems are just going to magnify and you're going to be pissed off at us saying, well, where's the money?
So you're making sure they have a good foundation in place before you just put the fire hose on.
Yep. Exactly.
Okay, cool. So that's a good answer. And the other question that I'm sure people are wondering is like, how did you guys come together? You know, I think it's tough to start one business. Y'all have multiple businesses. So tell us the backstory. How did you guys meet?
Yeah.
How did you get into business together?
Essentially, I started dating.
You found him on Craigslist.
Yeah, Craigslist. Yeah.
I started dating his cousin.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that I knew her and we actually knew each other.
Years. Yeah.
Yeah. But never well. We were just kind of in the same circle.
We weren't friends.
Yeah. Okay.
Different friend circles.
Yeah. Yeah. So homeschooled, kind of grew up in the same circle. And when I moved back from New York, my background's in motion graphics. I started to run into issues with tech problems, you know, and started to turn to Justin and say, hey, man, you want to figure some of these things out? And then we just started working more and more and more together.
How did you get into the whole marketing space? I mean, was it on accident? Was it reading a book, attending a seminar? You see people making money online. Like, how did you get into the marketing space?
We were always really in the marketing space. I mean, my background in motion graphics, you're always producing that, you know, just like this here was, you know, it's created for marketing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I did not want to do motion graphics anymore. And that's when I really started to say, how can I create something to make recurring residual income? And really, I wanted to partner up with people to solve real problems, not just surface level problems. And so, you know, Justin had always been in small business as well.
Yeah, yeah. I grew up, my dad had a construction company. And so I was helping him with his operations. We had a, you know, custom motorcycle shop. We'd convert motorcycles into three-wheel trikes. And so I just had the business background. I always enjoyed like systems and processes. And then when he met, and I like tech too, like I was coding since I was 6 years old. Like it's just stuff that I loved. And so when he married into the family and we started talking more, like he hated all those things. I loved all those things. And so he's the creative guy, the marketing guy. I'm more of like the back end process, systems development. And so it was like a perfect marriage as far as like in a business.
Yeah. Do you think that people, when they're partnering, should find somebody who's just like them in skill sets and mindset?
No.
Or find somebody who has different skill sets?
Yeah. Everyone we know who's done it successfully, it's polar opposite.
Yeah. 100%.
Someone's got to be the marketer, the salesperson. Someone's got to be the visionary. Someone's got to be the ops, the finance, the accounting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. And one of the things we're talking about off camera is like some of the things that you guys do within your businesses that make you kind of stand out. And one of them was niching down. Could we talk a little bit about that? Yeah. Like most businesses struggle. And you guys know I do consulting with business all the time. And you know, the worst thing somebody says is we serve everybody.
Yeah.
And you guys are like, no, you got to niche down. So let's talk about that. How did that change your business?
It was really hard for us because our framework could really work for anyone. And so we started working just by accident with one of the fastest growing orthodontists in the world. And through that transformative process, he was actually local in our hometown. We really started to get a lot of hands-on experience. And that's where we were like, hey, we can really offer a true partnership. We see the operations, we see the front desk, we see the issues, and we see their pain. And so, yeah, we were just able to help solve problems at a higher level.
And so niching down is critical. You don't just think that for yourself, but your advice for others tuning in is like, they should start to get more on what is your advice for somebody? Like, how do they start niching down if they feel like, but I'm going to miss out on all this other opportunity and all these other leads that are coming to me. You're saying that they should just focus on one or two specific audiences?
Yeah, it's really the only way to grow. Who are you speaking to? Also with your team, you know, you have to train your team. And so that's been a big issue as well. Like, hey, we'll bring in an IT company. Well, IT is a lot different than orthodontics, you know? Yeah. So it's all about the system, your team being on the same page, and also with marketing. as you know, speaking to one specific person, it's so much easier to develop all your content for us orthodontists. Everything we deliver and develop is for orthodontists.
So what are you guys doing online? Like, you know, one of the things I find ironic sometimes about marketing agencies is they never actually do any marketing for their own business. They just, it's always word of mouth and people keep coming in. So what are you guys doing? Obviously you're on the show, you're building your brand, you're investing in getting more exposure out there. But what are some other things that you guys do to actually go out and acquire customers for yourself?
Well, I think live events and with COVID virtual events have been huge for us. Yeah. Speaking on stage, that's how we started to build a lot of momentum. And then leveraging the partnerships that you're in. So also, what are the vendors that do what you don't do? Whether it be cutting processing fees or hiring and deploying talent. And going to those groups, companies, and say, hey, we serve the same market. How can we partner up? Let's do a podcast. Let's be strategic partnerships, maybe discount an offer together, et cetera. And then you can really start to build your trust and credibility, not only within orthodontics, but everyone who serves orthodontics as well.
Yeah. And another thing we do is like, we've done this from day one is like produce a lot of educational content that's like for our target market. That's from anything from the front desk call scripts to how to structure your org chart to really anything that they would need to get to really enhance their practice. We do that. And so like that helps us a lot, get new leads, people reaching out to get those resources. Then we've got over a 60 module course that goes over all that stuff in detail too.
That's awesome. Yeah. I'm a big advocate of creating content and kind of the attraction marketing. People enjoy consuming your content. They either find it because it was just searching online or they find it because maybe you paid to put it in front of them. So I love that you're saying that. One of the things that you kept saying specifically was our team. And I think that's one of the hardest roadblocks for most entrepreneurs and businesses is like, how do you build a team?
Yeah.
How do you actually find good talent? And again, before the cameras were rolling, we're kind of chatting about this. You guys seem to have a pretty good process for creating culture and finding a good team. You know, what's your advice for the business though that's tuning in and they're saying, my biggest struggle right now is either finding good team members or creating good company culture. What's kind of your guys' process for that?
So we realized that after kind of burning down several teams, you know, and we thought we could just focus on our offer and orthodontist. And hey, if we just focus on that, the team will come and kind of get on board. And that doesn't happen. You need to focus on your team first and foremost, because if you're developing them, investing into them, they're going to be able to serve your customer or client at a high level. And we had to learn that the hard way. It took several years. But fast forward today, you know, constantly educating your team. Are you doing trainings with your team? Do you have SOPs? Are you doing fun things outside of work? Like we'll do virtual escape rooms together and just things like that to build the morale and in the team into a tight-knit, fun place to work.
Yeah. What are some of the mistakes that you guys felt like you made maybe early on when building the team versus obviously your new process now for taking care of people? Did you make some mistakes early on?
Yeah. I think a big mistake we made was like thinking they were like us. And that's like the biggest mistake most entrepreneurs make is
that they had to be like.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, you know, mentors have always told me it's like your employees are never going to love your company and treat it the same as you.
Yeah.
Exactly. Even if they have a little bit of equity, it's still different.
Still very different.
It's your baby.
Yeah. And so it's like we've had to learn how to coach them, how to lead them, and how to give them the resources they need and the training they need to actually thrive in their role. And then it goes back to like making sure the right people are in the right seats too. You may bring someone in that's not a good fit, but they lead better than they came onto your team. And so that's really important to us, even if we identify a person that it may be just like, you know, they're a culture fit, but they're not a skill set fit. How do we help them get to the next place? And so those are kind of some things that we always kind of focus on.
Are you traditionally looking for people who are a blank slate and you can train them on your process? Or are you looking for somebody to come in who already has talent? Or is it both depending on the position?
It's both. Yeah.
Depending on like a specialist, you may want someone who really has a proving track record, but maybe in more of a generalist role, a culture fit is more important.
Yeah, definitely.
I want to talk about marketing real quick with you guys and kind of shift gears because you guys are in the marketing space for one of your primary businesses. But let's talk about what are some of the mistakes that you guys see people making with online advertising today?
So I think it's the experience, right? Like when a lead is generated, for us, the marketing...
Meaning the customer experience, the journey?
Exactly. For us, the marketing's easy. Like we can get leads. We can do marketing very easily. Most people can figure out how to run a Facebook ad in a few minutes.
Yeah, I always try to say it's easy to get eyeballs on your offer, your story.
What happens after that?
Yes.
And so we're in an age where there's so much noise, so much automation, emails. I mean, I was talking to a company earlier and they're like, oh yeah, we'll just dump them into an email automation. It's like, great. I delete or don't look at all those emails.
Yeah.
And so especially today, the appointment setter is more important than ever. So for us, we're generating a lead and calling that lead within 5 minutes. You know, and then we're calling.
There's research around that.
Research.
Like, that if you call them within 5 minutes, there's a much higher likelihood than
400%. 400% higher chance. Even in the first minute, it's, you know, 300-something%
that they convert.
Yeah. First minute, 5 minutes, those are your windows. And so for us, that's huge. Not only in our business, we're training that to everyone who works with us. And things can really go bananas easily if you'll follow that simple process. Because if you think about it, text, emails, phone calls, voicemails, social media, I mean, we are inundated. And unless you're going to do something different, then you're not going to stand out.
Yeah. What about the platforms? I know a lot of people traditionally think Facebook ads, but let's be honest, there's so many other ways to generate awareness, to do media buying and advertising. Do you guys have any specific platforms that you say, regardless of dentists and orthodontics, every business needs to be on these platforms, whether it's content creation or marketing? Do you have any of those platform suggestions?
I think it's really the big ones are, you know, YouTube, Google Ads, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. You know, LinkedIn can be huge, especially for B2B. But I think more than anything, it's like being on brand, being authentic, you know, developing that free training, that organic material, because we've been able to then break that down for all platforms.
Yeah.
And then our message is the same everywhere. So if you come to our website or visit our channels, you're going to be retargeted with everything that's on brand with the right message. And you're going to see it again and again and again. And it's all going to be speaking to your pain.
Yeah. Like, I think one of the biggest mistakes I see is a lot of, especially younger agencies or newer agencies, because it's the new hot thing to do, is they just copy someone else. They don't have their own voice. They don't have their own brand. They're just doing what everyone else is doing, which it'll work short term, but long term, you build nothing. And so it's like having that solid foundation, understanding who your brand is, what it represents, and who you're speaking to, I think is key.
I love that.
Yeah. And I mean, just to tack onto that, we focused for the first 4 years in building our framework and our brand so we could have that credibility and trust. If out of the gate, you're just sell, well, you're going to have a ton of churn. And so you need to be thinking about your brand, thinking about your offer and making sure that's rock solid. I'm not saying don't sell. Selling's fun, marketing's fun, but make sure that you're not just going to have high churn, because, you know, it's said that one bad person is going to go, one unhappy client is going to go tell 10 people, whereas a happy one may only tell 3. Mm-hmm. And so you have to have a gauge on that and understand what your audience is saying about your brand.
That's a huge one right there. It's critical to make the distinction of like, what is the lifetime value of a customer too? It's something that every marketer understands. I noticed we all have our wedding bands on. And one of the things I would like to talk about on the show here is like, how do you actually balance being an entrepreneur, being a business owner, and having like a social life and being there for your significant other and, you know, for your children, perhaps? How do you guys find balance? I mean, you don't just have one company, which is tough enough. You have multiple businesses. How do you guys find this balance or integration between work life and personal life?
Yeah. So that was, again, something very hard.
Very tough. Yeah.
First year for me was terrible. Like I got married and started a business at the same time. So I was stressed out, you know, grinding. We had all this.
Two big shifts.
Yeah. Had all this student loan debt, living in a tiny apartment. Obviously all that has changed, but also you just learn and go through things. And it's like, hey, one of the most important things for me, if I'm not at work, I'm spending time with my family. So I have obviously wife, Catherine, and a 3-year-old daughter, Aislinn, and I'm doing stuff with them. You know, we have a garden outside, just bought 15 acres. And so just doing things around the house, hanging out and just spending quality.
Do you try to turn it off? Like,
yeah,
get the phone out of here. Yeah. Just try to drop in and be present.
Yeah. But I also think like people, that's a balancing act, right? Like sometimes when my daughter goes to bed, it's like, if I have things to do and commitments, I'm going to make sure that I meet those things, mm-hmm. you know? So I may come back online at 8 p.m. when she goes down, do a few things, shut it off, then spend some quality time with Catherine as well. Just one-on-one talk, wind down, watch a show. But sometimes you do have to grind 12 hours a day. Sometimes we have to go in and work weekends.
There's seasons, right? Yeah, like it's 100%. Sometimes it's a little bit harder in the beginning than it hopefully is later when you have a team.
Yeah. And I agree with everything he said. And I think a key thing is like setting the proper expectations and communicating with your partner and making sure that you're on the same page. I think as entrepreneurs, a lot of times we assume the people that are important to us just know us and know how we think. And that's a big misconception. It took me a long time to figure that out. So it's just like over communicate and make sure expectations are set. So if you do work long hours or you have a big project coming up or something like that, make sure your partner knows that.
One of the things that I've seen is like a constant thread amongst successful entrepreneurs, not just entrepreneurs, because most entrepreneurs fail. We all know the stats. It's like 85% of businesses fail within 10 years or whatever the stat is, right? I've heard a lot of different numbers. But the consistent thread of people who come on the show, business rock stars like yourselves, is they found a way to reframe failure. You know, school teaches us failure, that's bad. You're going to go home, you're going to get punished by your parents probably if you fail. That's terrible. But in business, we fail probably more than we succeed. Yeah. How have you guys maybe tricked your brain to convince yourself that failure is actually a good thing if I learn from it?
It's the only way to grow. I mean, you look at Brett Favre, most interceptions thrown, Babe Ruth, most strikeouts. But on the other side of that was huge success. So I think it's just about accepting it. It's going to happen. And it's that cheesy cliche fail forward, but it's really true, you know?
Yeah, 100%. I agree with all that. And, you know, that's another thing, go back to the team thing. That's where we struggled with is like they perceive failure very differently than we perceive failure. And, you know, just learning to, you know, ingrain that in your culture that it's okay to not succeed every time. You're not going to always like do the right thing for the client or do the right thing for the team. But be okay with that, learn from it, and then grow from it.
Yeah. Most importantly, like what we try and teach our team is collaboration. Like if, and I think this is big for teams because it's like sometimes they're so scared they won't even take steps forward. So they won't even do anything. It's like, hey, no, ask questions. Like it's not about Justin failing or winning or Luke. It's about HIP. It's about at the end of the day, did HIP fail or succeed, learn from it, grow, and just handle it as a team.
One of the weird questions I like to talk about today in the wealth transfer that is happening in the world right now is it's probably more unlikely that you're going to double or triple your business, but it's a lot easier in this unique time we live in to double or triple maybe the cash you have in the bank or double or triple your net worth with different investment classes like the crazy volatility in crypto. Are you guys spending a good chunk of your time also taking your company's treasury and cash reserves and finding other ways to allocate it? Like Michael Saylor with MicroStrategy, a publicly traded company, they dumped all of their company's treasury reserves into Bitcoin and it went from 500 million to 5 billion.
Yeah.
Or are you guys just all in on the business? I just like to know, you know, some entrepreneurs like Michael Saylor, as an example, took all of his company's cash, dumped it into Bitcoin and it went to 5 billion. It worked out. Yeah. Other companies are like, I'm taking all of our money. We're putting it all back into the business. But back to my point. Right now, it could be harder to double or triple your company than it could to double or triple the cash reserves that you have. So where do you guys stand on that? Are you just putting it all back into the business or are you looking for other ways to allocate and invest your cash from the company?
It's a little bit of both. Yeah. Unfortunately, we didn't make $5 billion in Bitcoin.
You know, we all wish we could have, right?
But we are investing in real estate. So we started a separate real estate company through WealthCap. We're buying some properties. We have a little bit of money in crypto. But we are also putting a lot back into the business.
Yeah. And the auto part company is like, it's cash heavy anyways. It's inventory based. So it's like, you know, taking some of the cash we have and putting it back into that company. And it's a young company. It's been around for 5 years now. But it's growing like explosive growth. So it's like a lot of demand. We're building a really big facility to really invest in our team, bringing both our companies under, you know, one building, which is important to us. So. Kind of a mixture of both.
Yeah. And we're actually going through a process now where we're looking at how structurally everything should be set up. Trust, you know, you have exposure as a business owner. So it's really important to learn about that. How can you protect yourself? And then also how can you have an investment strategy that fits into that?
Love it. Yeah. You got to get that. You got to get that property trust, business trust, family trust, set up as a complex trust, and then funnel things into a 501c3.
Exactly.
It's a game, but it's the one that the wealthy people know how to play.
And exactly. And it's constantly changing. So working with people or understanding it yourself how tax strategies may have to change depending on every 4 to 8 years. It's a lot, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So, but it's one of those costly opportunity mistakes that some people choose not to pay attention to it, and sometimes it can cost you a little bit more. So there's usually two types of entrepreneurs, and I'm curious which one you guys fall into. Entrepreneurs who are self-made, they didn't really have any mentors or coaches or support in that regard. And then there's the entrepreneur that's like, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for great mentors, hiring advisors and consultants and coaches and reading a ton of books, maybe going to seminars, joining mastermind groups. Which one do you guys fall into?
I'll just tell you quickly my story. You know, from an early age, I was very entrepreneurial. So I, for instance,
so you guys both had the lemonade stand. This guy was like coding at six years old.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But there was a ceiling to that that I hit very quickly. Yep. When we started HIP, it's like, okay, we have mild success here. So now, and Justin actually really is the one who kind of spearheaded coaches, consultants, and growth and going through some real pain, but then you can have exponential growth.
Yeah. Yeah, the same thing. It's a hybrid. Like the early, I would say the early years, it was like this bucket over here. And then I got smart and moved to this bucket. And so finding people that have been where I'm at today, how do I get to where they're at? And then just keep finding that person that speaks to you, that you can actually learn a few things here and there from, I think is really important.
Yeah. And push yourself. Like it's good to be uncomfortable. And I would even say push yourself financially. Like if it's painful and like I've got to spend 50K or 100K on this coach or program. If it's the right move, do it. You know?
Yeah, I like that. You got to get a little uncomfortable, right? Like, I don't remember what the term was, but it was like, you know, those who hold their cash usually don't understand how to deploy it. Mm-hmm. Cash should actually go to work.
Yeah.
And we're taught like, make money, save it.
Yeah.
When in reality, you got to learn how to put your money to go to work for you, whether that's hiring more people, investing in different things. So getting a mentor.
Yeah.
Is there a mentor that you guys look at? And maybe a mentor is not the right word, like Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk, even though everybody in the crypto space kind of hates Elon right now. Is there like a specific person that you guys like to just keep an eye on? What Jeff Bezos is doing, what Elon Musk is doing? Those are just some common names.
Yeah, probably not that high level, even though we follow him for fun. But someone who's helped me a lot is actually Taylor Welch at Traffic and Funnels. Spent some time with him. Digested a lot of his material.
A great marketer.
Yeah, great marketer. Eli Wilde on the sales side.
Yeah, yeah.
But also the
friend of mine.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So also the greats like Jim Rohn.
Classics.
Yeah. Les Brown.
Yeah.
I would say the same thing. It's like there's not like one mentor that I would say like that just like screams at me, but just finding that right one like at each stage of life that kind of speaks to you at that, like where you're at. Like 2018, I went to Warrior Week, which is a program
Gary J. White
went on. You know, so I went to that. It was right for that time of my life. It helped me get through some things, which was very helpful. But just like always being open to finding that person when it speaks to you and then just committing to it, then I think is super important.
I love that. And again, like you said, it's all seasons of life, seasons of business and growth. And, you know, you need different people to support you at different stages. You guys seem to have a good dynamic. You know, I've been seeing you off camera and on camera. Most, I feel like, advice people are given, at least that we've kind of all heard, is like, don't ever go into business with family or your dear friends, because it could be possibly maybe bad. Do you agree with that? Obviously, you're in business, you know.
Well,
your friends, you're in family together now. So
I think it really comes down to, well, a few things. One, what's your vision? So creating a vision together, making sure we're in alignment, but more than anything, like morals and ethics. Because if those things don't line up, like for instance, lying in business, you know, to partners or about finances, like it's not going to work. And so we're very aligned when it comes to morals and ethics, and we're going to act out of integrity, you know, and our core values that we've developed for our business really speaks to that.
Are you bringing more family into the business? Because, you know, sometimes you start to lead the way financially and then that's like everybody's losing their jobs around you and you're like, ugh. I guess I got to bring in all these family members into the business. Are you guys planning on bringing more family in?
Not really. Like his wife or my cousin started with us and she kind of moved out of the company. And then, I mean, we do have the company with my brother, which has worked really well. But like I grew up working with family. Like that's all we did. My grandfather worked in the motorcycle shop with me. My dad, you know, owned both the companies. And so working with family was kind of like ingrained in me. So it's just something that I was open to. I think most people that enter a partnership with like a close friend that's kind of like a brother or sister, they don't have that. They just kind of enter it because it's like a fun thing, idea to do. and they're not in alignment. They don't understand like who they are as people or where they want to go. And I think that's where a lot of the clash happens. It's like they start to find out who each other are and realize that they're not like exactly what they need to be.
And they want totally different things.
Yeah.
You know?
And when things are shiny and rainbows and money's coming in, things are easy, but we know that's not always the case for business. And sometimes when things get tough and people are kind of put into a corner, so to speak, that's when their true personality can shine. And that's sometimes where the conflict happens. But again, I love all the advice that you guys are giving. I want to know, what would you guys do if you had to start all over again? In today's economy, with your skills, knowing how to run ads, we're going to take that away. You're a blank slate. You got to start all over again. What do you do?
First thing I would do is say, what's my niche, right? How am I going to niche down? Who am I going to speak to? I would probably roll out some type of product, like a course, coaching, and scale that way, because I think it's much easier to scale that in a product versus a service. That's kind of how I feel today if I had to completely start over.
I love it. Self-education, that's kind of like the big trend right now is people monetizing education online. What about you?
Yeah, I agree with most of that. Like when I started, like as a blank state, I got into affiliate marketing, for instance. And so like it was a lot of work. I took a lot of risk. You know, I had to take out a loan to kind of build my first software, which is in the affiliate marketing space. And so it's like, if it was me again, I would probably go that route again around like using the affiliate marketing side as far as to get people into something that I created, whether it's a course or another software, something like that.
So selling somebody else's product or service, so you don't have to worry about this, the fulfillment, the product development and all of that.
Yep.
Awesome. So let's go to one of our final questions, which is, if you guys had to share with somebody, what does like the vision look like for your entrepreneurial journey? What do you guys feel like the next vision looks like? You were talking about an exit for one of your companies. Mm-hmm. You're probably going to start a couple other businesses. What does the vision kind of look like moving forward from here? So when people see you in 2, 3, 4, 5 years, they're like, they did it. They're on to the next thing. What is it?
Yeah, I mean, our vision is really to, I think, just uncover our full potential. Yeah. So what is our full potential? Immediately with HIP, we want to get to 500 orthodontists and or dentists. So that's the vision that we're sharing with our team, which also is really important. We go back to team, make sure that you're sharing your vision with them so that they know where you're going as well. For the auto part company, we are tiny in our infancy and the ceiling is huge. Our competitors are $500 million or $1 billion companies.
So that one has a lot of room to grow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. And the last question that we'll end with is for somebody who's watching right now, and they're trying to decide, should I jump into entrepreneurship? Maybe they've been thinking about it for a while. They've been watching Shark Tank, which we've had some of the sharks on here before. Is there a right time for somebody to get started in entrepreneurship? And what's your advice for somebody who does take that jump and get started?
Yeah, I mean, I think as soon as possible. I've had friends who, because of comfort and salaries, just put it off. One friend in particular lost his job during COVID and was forced to create his agency. I helped him a little bit, did a few calls with them, encouraged him more than anything. And he's already doing 10K months. And so now he's saying, oh, I wish I would have done this years ago.
Yeah.
So if you have that mindset, you should probably go ahead and start today. Even if you fail, like we talked about, that's okay.
Should they have a certain amount of cash in the bank, like 3 months, 6 months of cash reserves? Should they take out a loan? Do you have any of that advice? I know it's tough without like a contextual example of a person. But just like some simple advice for somebody, like, do they just quit today and get started? Is there ever a perfect time?
I don't think there's ever a perfect time, but like, if they're going to do it, it's like you've got nights, you've got weekends, like most people work 35, 40 hours a week at whatever their primary job is. And so it's like, take that those extra 40 hours a week, put it into something that you're more passionate about, like, you know, test it. Maybe you fail for 3, 6, 12 months, but you hit that one thing that you find that works. And then you can just start scaling back your safe job and then move into something that you actually love.
Yeah. And I'll say if you're single, like you don't have many responsibilities, you shouldn't have big bills, just do it now. If you're married, have kids, you probably have to be a bit more intentional.
Yeah. You got a little bit more responsibility. Yeah. That's good. I like that. All right. So website, social media, do you guys have a place that people can go and look you up, follow you? Maybe there's some dentists or ortho people checking this out and they want to know about your services. What's the website?
You can just go to hip.agency.
Okay.
No.com. And then also you could search us on Facebook or Instagram, Hip Creative, or Luke and Finger and Justin.
Justin Joel, yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on the show, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
This is Business Rockstars. I'm Mark Lack. And for more episodes like this, head over to businessrockstars.com.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to learn more about improving your healthcare marketing, day-to-day operations, and standing strong in your market, send us an email at hello@hipcreativeinc.com. That's hello@hipcreativeinc.com. Or jump over to our website at hip.agency.